June 1987. Maybe having these dealers follow us is a bad idea. June 1st, 1987, Van Nuys, 12:50 a.m. Rehearsals were a kick today. We decided to hire background singers for the tour. As we progress as a band, we've naturally started to use more background vocals, but it can be hard to cover them live and boring to be stuck on the mic all night. So we decided to use female background singers like the Stones. We'll be auditioning girls all week at rehearsal. Should be interesting. Band needs less rehearsal this tour than usual. The old stuff is tight, and the new stuff isn't that far off. I think the new stuff is simpler and more bluesy at times. It just falls in the pocket easier. There's the usual excitement about the tour production going around like a virus. I love this part, the part where the visual meets the music. We're having the stage show evolve. More on that later. My ears are ringing. Off to bed, working out in the morning. When you're sitting on a plane 40,000 feet up in the air, looking out the window, dreaming of your future and how bright it appears to be, or maybe just watching the drops of rain being pushed into different designs from the force of air at 400 miles per hour, well, life feels good. Then the oxygen masks fall, the plane jumps, snaps, and jolts. People start to scream, babies burst out crying, people start praying, all in time to the overhead announcement that we're going to crash. Right then, as your life flashes before your eyes, you hear yourself say, "God, if you get me out of this one, I'll stop." Insert lie right there, forever. Right then, the nose of the plane pulls up and the captain says, "Wow, that was a close one, folks. We're okay. We'll be landing in 30 minutes and we're all safe and sound. Sorry for the scare." That's how getting hooked on junk is. When the kick is over, you can't believe you ever got on that plane in the first place. The question is, will you ever fly again? June 3rd, 1987, Van Nuys, 10:45 p.m. We met about 10 singers today. Some of them could sing and some of them could dance. The ones that could sing couldn't dance. The ones that were pretty couldn't sing. And the ones that were ugly sang like Janis Joplin. What a nightmare. We'll have more tomorrow. This one girl was dancing in front of us, grinding on the mic, and then went over to Mick and was singing in his face. I had to look down and away so I didn't burst out laughing. Almost pissed my pants laughing after she left. Good times. Mick's playing his ass off. I haven't seen that fire in him in a while. I think the break did him good. June 5th, 1987, Van Nuys, 11:20 p.m. We finally picked our background singers, a girl named Amy and one named Donna. I told the band the first rule of the tour, nobody fucks the background singers. These tours have enough drama and problems without us importing dysfunctional relationships right into the fucking heart of them. But it was amazing to hear the vocals on top of all the guitars and drums. It took it to another level. Badass. Of course, I foresee problems. I mean, chicks equal trouble. A lot of phone calls today with management about last-minute details for the tour. If we have one more meeting at rehearsal, I think I'm going to lose my cool. They seem to think that since we're all together, it's their time to trap us, and we end up not getting to rehearse as much as we should. I don't know. Maybe that's not a bad thing. An over-rehearsed rock band can sound sterile.
Doug Thaler. We auditioned the background singers at the practice facility in Burbank. One of them was Amy Canyon, and looking back, I should have known from the start we'd have trouble with her. When she came to the audition, she'd only been married for 6 months, and she was already telling us she wanted to go on tour to get away from her husband. Nikki laid down the law about nobody sleeping with the backing singers, and the band all agreed, which was highly ironic, given that Vince had already tried his luck with both of the girls at the audition and been knocked back. But when Amy later turned her attention to Mick, it was a very different story.
June 12, 1987, Van Nuys, 9:30 a.m. I just realized I haven't written in here for a week. Maybe because I've just been getting on with life like other people do. Rehearsal's been great. I've not been drinking more than the half a bottle of Jack at night. Even Jason has given up on calling me. This is like a health kick. Maybe there are two things I do when I'm falling apart. Writing this book and phone vanity, ha. Huh. Now for the hard part, holding it together on tour. June 15th, 1987, Van Nuys, 11 a.m. So today I'm packing for the tour. Making a list, checking it twice. Knife, two pairs of leather pants, eight t-shirts, boots, rubbers, black nail polish, black eye makeup, get that at Save-On. $3,000 in cash, get the office to drop that off, 2 grams, no syringes, sleeping pills, candles, incense, flask, diary, blank journals, have whiskey picked up for obedience camp. Now for the killer question, how long before I can dump the psycho girlfriend? All will be revealed. Follow me. June 16th, 1987, Sheraton Hotel, Tucson, Arizona, 2:30 p.m. Got into the hotel from L.A. an hour ago. We're all going down to the arena in a while. I can't wait to see the stage set. After all the bombastic sets in the past and all the cheap imitations that have followed our every move, our direction is simpler this time. It's raw, stripped back, but huge. A lot of the power will come from the lights, the pyro, and our way too big PA. We shoot the Rolling Stone cover tomorrow, and I want to see what's around here for the shoot. Since I'll be doing my best to keep my nose clean on this tour, I'm going to try to write a lot every day. Someday, maybe, I'll have kids and they can read these diaries, or no, maybe not. The Rolling Stone writer is hanging around asking us questions. I wish he would leave us alone. He doesn't know shit about rock and roll. Same typical stupid questions. How many girls do we fuck? How much do we party? No questions about music, spirit, lyrics, soul. No questions about the Dolls or Angus Young. Just the same old bubblegum magazine bullshit. June 17th, 1987, Sheraton Hotel, Tucson, Arizona, 1:40 a.m. Wow, the set turned out amazing. It's exactly what we've intended it to be. It has so many levels and different looks. Tommy's solo is insane. The drums flip all around. In fact, I think he's insane, thank God. I have to tell you, if you ever have to come to Tucson in June, don't. It's fucking hot. I mean, the kind of hot where rattlesnakes won't even come out. You walk outside in the day, and a wave of heat slams you in your face. It feels like you've stuck your head in a fucking oven. All the usual suspects came around tonight. I said no to all but two lines and a few shots. I'm not starting off the tour with a hangover. I can't believe I'm off junk. What a horror story that was. But I have to watch it, because the junkies just seem to sniff me out. The word's on the street that I'm clean, and they don't like it. I want to help out Slash and give his band some shows. They're not worth any tickets, but I believe in them. Cool new band, but the singer, he can be an asshole, but what's new, right? I can see him and Vince bumping heads. It's good to see Fred again with his perfect hair and Grizzly Adams beard covered in tattoos. He always wears the devil's smirk, which somehow yields him more pussy than the guys in the band. As soon as Fred walks into the room, I know we're really back on the road again. Everybody's hired, the plane is on the runway, trucks and buses all warmed up, hanger-oners are floating around outside the arena, so let the madness commence, because I know it will.
Fred Saunders. I was tour security for Motley Crue ever since the Shout of the Devil tour. When Doc McGee first hired me, he said the band was so wild I should do whatever it took to keep them in line. In fact, he said he'd give me a bonus every time I hit them. I told him he got himself a deal. I hit Motley a lot. I once broke Tommy's nose in Indiana. I broke Nicky's ribs, and I beat the shit out of Vince many times because he's an asshole. I think I even hit poor Mick once. That was just to complete the set. Nicky was always the strongest of the guys. He was the brightest and had the biggest ideas. Vince had just got lead singer syndrome, and Tommy was a typical drummer. He's always 100 miles per hour and everything is fine by him. Mick just always wanted to drink his wine and not be bothered with anything. So it was always Nicky's moods that shaped what happened with Motley. Nicky and I became friends and had a good relationship, on the whole. We'd get fucked up drunk together, cut our hands and swap blood to show that we were blood brothers. But Nicky was a very wild, unpredictable guy. He had so many facades. He'd rarely show his true personality. I also worked with Ozzy Osbourne a lot, and there are many similarities between those guys.
Ross Halfen. Fred was this big ex-Hells Angels guy, and part of his job for Motley Crue was scoring cocaine. They used to call it Krell, from that movie Heavy Metal, where monsters from the planet Krell came down with big noses and snorted earth. They'd say, "Where's the Krell, man?" and ask Fred, "Dude, are you gonna Krell me?" Fred's other job was stopping them getting smashed up and getting into fights. One thing about Motley Crue is they will never turn away from a fight. Vince, Nicky, and Tommy are fearless. If there are 50 people, they will fight them. You have to hit them with a brick to stop them. They will take on the world.
9:30 a.m. What the fuck is wrong with housekeeping? They just keep knocking on my door. Now I can't sleep. Fucking great. It's going to be a long-ass day. 2:40 p.m. Just woke up. Finally, about 10:30 this morning, I ordered 2 shots of Jack for breakfast so I could go back to sleep. Room service lady was about 65 and gave me that grandmotherly look of disapproval. The fact that I had on more makeup than she did probably didn't help. Vanity's coming in today, and I'm dreading the drama. Why do I put myself in these situations? I really need to say no. She will either, 1, embarrass me, 2, be a bitch, 3, be over hyper, 4, complain, 5, get high, 6, stumble around and get drunk. I mean, isn't that my fucking job? I'd rather sleep with the grandma room service lady. June 18th, 1987, Sheraton Hotel, Tucson, Arizona, 4:20 a.m. Vanity's asleep in the other room, lying in bed. Her hair's all over the pillow like a seductive Medusa, skin like milk chocolate against the white sheets and goose down pillows. You'd think she was a gift from the gods, but somehow we are like fire and ice, oil and vinegar, and mostly it's painful. We argue a lot, not all the time, but a lot. Let's just say we end everything in an argument, usually over some stupid stuff. Somehow, I feel like I'm in high school when we're fighting, because nothing that we ever fight about is even important. I'm sure she feels the same. In fact, I know she does, because she told me so right before she told me to fuck off and went to bed last night. I just took a celebration shot in the bathroom. Okay, I admit to having brought a small bundle of gear. God, I love that warm feeling that comes over me. Okay, I admit I brought a pack of rigs. It's the best feeling in the world as you slump back and everything in life feels perfect. I know I said I wouldn't use again, but this was just a final kiss goodbye, just a pat on the back for being off dope, right? Now I'll sleep like a baby. Oh, yeah, we did the cover shoot for Rolling Stone. First show tomorrow. Better get some sleep. Life's good. P.S. I got the dope from Pete. He's back on. Do you know what I think now when I hear that diary entry? I guess that you know you're insane when you're lying to yourself in your own diary. That's what I think.
Bob Timmons. I always thought Nicky and Vanity had an extremely unhealthy relationship. Basically, they were co-addicts. Whenever Nicky got attention, Vanity would act out her jealousy. If he was in a room talking to people, she would get up on a table and start dancing. There was no support for Nicky at all because essentially, they were always in competition with each other.
Evangelist Denise Matthews. Live hard, die young. That was where my vision was taking me until the reality of staring down that dark pit of death woke me up in shock. That is when I cried out to Jesus to save me lest I die. I was suffering in the bottomless pit playground of cocaine addiction, lifting me higher and dropping me like a steel beam. I'd smoked enough rock that you could lift me up and stick me in the nearest cold grave. Sinking down into deep depression, I camouflaged my pain with even more makeup and a false smile. I have a shocking medical history of high blood pressure, of 250 over 190, plus a heart attack, stroke, and kidney failure due to my addiction. I had blood clots in my brain and had only 3 days left to masquerade this miserable, lifeless creature that I had become. That was 15 years ago. I said, "Do whatever it takes, Jesus. Just don't let me die."
7:35 p.m. More rehearsal today and a lot of hurry up and wait. Beats the hotel. Rich Fisher's still trying to get the jet together, but I guess painting it black is taking longer than we thought. So we'll probably have to lease a Learjet for a few days. Feels so good to be out of L.A. and all that temptation and the losers who creep around. I feel so guilty I did some dope, but it's gone and I'm okay. I need to load up on some music. Better hit the music store. I'd die without music. I feel like I'm getting my life back. I gotta say the band sounds killer. We always pull it together right before the tour. Rehearsals back in L.A. seem to drag on forever. Playing the songs in a dingy little sweatbox just doesn't have the zap it used to. As soon as we have to rise to the occasion, we always get energized and sound tight as fuck. But one thing is bothering me. Vince isn't the same guy he used to be. Since the accident, he seems bitter and withdrawn. I can feel him slipping away from all of us. He seems to not want to be in the gang. He's marching to his own drum, which is fine, but I'm assuming the drift is a resentment he has towards us since he went to jail. Can I blame him? Okay, I gotta get out of here right now. I'm off to a Mexican dinner with Fred Saunders and some of the band and crew. No drugs today, first show tomorrow.
Vince Neil. Nikki and Tommy were complete fucking assholes to me on the previous tour, Theater of Pain. At the time, I was not allowed to drink or use drugs because of my vehicular manslaughter conviction, but we'd be sitting on our jet and they'd think it was real funny to say, "Oh, Vince, pass me that Coke, will you?" I was supposed to be sober and nobody gave a shit. They were just drinking and having fun. Everybody was out for themselves and Nikki was the most spiteful of all. So Nikki and I didn't have much of a relationship on the Girls, Girls, Girls tour. Nikki and Tommy had a relationship and whatever they did, I made sure I did the opposite thing. I wasn't included in a lot of stuff they did, and I didn't want to be. I mean, heroin? Dude, I might be up for cocktails or a little coke, but there is no fun to be had in heroin. I wasn't comfortable hanging with Nikki. I just didn't want to be involved.
Vince, sober on the Theater of Pain tour? I guess if you don't count all the pills, he was. Tucson Community Center, June 19th, 1987. Sheraton Hotel, 3:30 a.m. I'm a bit smashed right now. We had too many margaritas at dinner. I got in a fight with Vanity again. She just can't shut up, so I told her to shut up or go home. Good fucking night. Nice way to start a tour. 1 p.m. Wow, I just woke up. I feel great. Sleep, the great healer. I have to go to the radio station with Tommy in a while, but first I'm going to go for a swim and lie in the sun for just a bit. Can't wait until Vanity gets the fuck out of here. She's so embarrassing, dancing around, lecturing us on shit. Who is she to tell us about anything? She's just a fucking crackhead. 4:15 p.m. Off to the radio station and then sound check. Whole fucking world is here for the first show tonight. Damn, I wish they'd given us a few shows to iron out the kinks. Plus, this is small. It's like 9,000 people or so. Yeah, it's sold out, but even so. Wish us luck. See you later. 6. Veterans Memorial Coliseum, Phoenix. June 20th, 1987. Sheraton Hotel, Tucson, Arizona, 1:30 a.m. Fucking show was great. I forgot how good it feels to play these songs. I admit to not being in the best shape, so I threw up on the side of the stage during Tommy's drum solo. It was kind of a shock to go full tilt for an hour and a half after all my body's been through. So off to bed. We leave for Phoenix at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon. I think the weasel writer from Rolling Stone is going to fly with us. This guy, I swear he's the guy I used to beat up in school. In fact, maybe that's what I need to do, kick his ass. He seems like a B-52s fan. Weak. P.S. Good news, the bitch went back to her brothel or crack house.
Vince Neil. Nikki's fucked up chick Vanity came out to our show in Tucson. As usual, she started doing all her crazy dancing right in front of us while we were trying to play. It was so bad that I told Nikki, dude, get your fucking chick out of here. She was driving everybody crazy. It was real fucking embarrassing.
Ross Halfen. Vanity was a dreadful, horrible thing. She used to dance in the photo pit so everybody could see her. All she'd do every night was dance like it was her show. She'd just crouch down with her legs wide open like she was a pole dancer in a strip bar.
Doug Thaler. Vanity was the kind of chick who would lecture you about how Coca-Cola would rot your teeth and could strip the paint off a car. Then she would go home and get shit-faced on the other kind of Coke. She was always winding the band up when they needed to be mellow. I'm sorry, but she was a real pain in the ass.
Evangelist Denise Matthews. Don't we just hate it when others lie to us, but we don't feel the lie when we're doing the lying? How could I point at anyone's window and smash their glass when my own window was already broken and I had lost all my stones, or better yet, my marbles? Firstly, I had to glue myself back together and then try to help others. But who can really clean up but God? He makes sure we don't bleed to death from all the shards of glass thrown at our feet along the way.
We were all doing the best we could with the tools we had. Unfortunately, the tools we had were crack pipes, syringes, Coke straws, and whiskey bottles. On the plane to Phoenix, 3:25 p.m. I'm on the jet we have to use until ours is ready. The worm from Rolling Stone is with us. I'm going to try and get him fucked up and slip him something. Maybe I can enlighten him. These writers always kiss up to you and then they slit your throat when the magazine comes out. I say keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer than you can see when their eyes turn brown, right? Mars is hanging awfully close to Amy, the background singer. Something's fishy. Mars always keeps to himself, but he seems a bit smug and sneaky. The one rule is nobody fucks the background singer, so who would have thought Mick would be the first to try? Chicks equal trouble. June 21st, 1987. Day off. Clarion Inn, Phoenix, Arizona, 1:30 a.m. Show was intense, even better than the first one. Denny Zalesko said he'd seen us a zillion times, and this was the best the band has ever been. We all ended up in the bathroom at the Coliseum doing tons of blow. There were loads of hot chicks, and Vince, as usual, picked the best ones first and rolled out. Mick was hanging with that backing singer chick, and me and Tommy did blow so long, there were no chicks left when we came out of the John. Lame. I guess I'll take a Halcyon, jerk off, and go to bed. Boring.
Tim Lutzy. The girls' tour may have predated the arrival of crack cocaine, but I remember some of Motley used to make their own in the microwave in the dressing room. I didn't notice immediately, but after a few days, I noticed the attention the microwave was getting and began to wonder why it was so damn important, especially seeing as the band's wives, girlfriends, and hot chicks in the backstage holding area were getting so little attention in comparison.
Rule number two. Don't give a rock star a microwave in his dressing room. It's kind of like giving matches to an arsonist. Noon. Day off. I'm going to lie in bed all day and watch TV. Did I tell you MTV's hammering our video? The bad news is all these bands are coming out that are B and C rate crew copies. In the end, the record companies trying to cash in will be the death of us if this shit doesn't stop. I feel bad for the fans. Rich Fisher always tries to plan something on our day off, and I always say, it's a day off, leave me alone. I guess since we pay the bills, it's in his best interest, right? I'm really going to try to be good today and tonight. 4 p.m. Just woke up again. I was just thinking about the time that me and Tommy were tag-teaming this chick behind Kiss's drums while they were playing rock and roll all night, right here in Scottsdale. We thought it was just fun, then we found out it was the drummer's girlfriend. Ouch. Nice girl. I think her name was Bambi. Now there's one you want to take home to Mom. Can you imagine? Hi, Mom. This is my future ex-wife, Bambi. It was also a nice way to get thrown off our first ever tour. You know what was worse than getting thrown off the Kiss tour for bad behavior? Listening to Gene Simmons talk about himself all day and all night long. Sometimes I'd just sit there and say, uh-huh, and write until he was done. For all his ego and bullshit, I like Gene, but I can't like him as much as he likes himself. That would be impossible. Tingley Coliseum, June 22nd, 1987. On our way to New Mexico, 2:30 p.m. Right now, I'm on our jet. We're sitting on the runway getting ready to take off. Holy fuck, it's insane. It's black. Have you ever seen a black jet? I'm digging this. We have a stewardess, blonde. We each have our own assigned seats, leather. I've already found a nice place to stash stuff for border crossings. The show's sold out, 11,000 people. Everyone is jacked up, so we're passing around a bottle of Jack with the stereo cranked. Tommy motioned to me to see the back of the plane, and he slid me a bindle. That's my boy. Random scribblings. We're the future, but the future looks bleak. I have no interest other than being uninterested. All these vampires masquerade as leaders and prey on the minds of the weak. All I know is I don't care. And even if I cared, I'd have no hope to carry me to where I need to go. Things I have to do. 1, sell the heroin house, and 2, dump vanity. County Coliseum, El Paso, Texas. June 23rd, 1987. On the Motley jet to El Paso, 1:30 a.m. Good show, but I'm fucking tired. I couldn't find any blow in this fucking town. I know Fred is holding. Doug and Doc are on him to keep me under control. If I'm tired and I'm doing my job, why can't I have a bump? They treat me like a child. It's fucking stupid. I'm going to buy an 8-ball next time I score so I don't have to go through this drama. We get into El Paso around 2:30 or 3, so I guess I'll be a good boy tonight. Boring. I hate it when people try to control me.
Ross Halfen. Nicky was never a mumbling, reclusive junkie. He always seemed to hold it together, but he would moan all the time. I'd ask him to do something in a photo session, he'd say, "Dude, I can't do it, I'm tired." Once I said to him, "It must be awful for you, having to stand against this wall backstage for 2 minutes so you can be on the cover of magazines. You could have a real job, like being a miner or working in Woolworths." He yelled, "Fuck you," which was what he always said to everything. But his general attitude, which made Motley Crue very successful, was fuck the world. Nicky was never as bad as Vince. I arrived to shoot one session, and Nicky and Tommy said, "We've got to talk to you. There's a problem with Vince." It turned out that the previous time I'd shot them, Vince had told me to make him look thin, which wasn't always easy, and I recommended he wear a black t-shirt. That was 2 years earlier, and he was still brooding about it. That's how removed from reality Motley Crue was.
Ross Halfen was so fun to wind up. We'd just bitch and moan even if we didn't have anything to complain about. It was fun to make his job harder because he took the bait every single time. I was recently in Europe with Ross, and I told him that for years I thought he was gay. He went on and on and on about it. Why? How could I do that? He said he was married. He had a son. After I let him go on a bit longer, I said, "Ross, 2 things. Even if you were, who the hell cares? I was just winding you up again." That's Ross, the easiest wind-up in rock and roll, but a hell of a sweet guy. Hotel, El Paso, Texas, 3 p.m. It's weird to think I used to live here. I used to ride my bike down to Piggly Wiggly with my friends to look at the newest Hot Wheels and toys. They used to have popcorn at the door when you walk in, so we decided we would get our popcorn bags half full and then go to the Hot Wheels section. We'd bury the cars deep into our popcorn and walk out. Man, I fucking miss being a kid. It was a time of innocence. I wish I could go back, because this life is hard. Good news, Tommy met these dealers, and they're going to follow the tour through Texas. We leave in the jet, they follow in their car. Now that's door-to-door service. El Paso, lyric. Balcony in El Paso. Cigarette butts grace my balcony, and the remains of a dead pigeon seem poetic. The life form that scurries around below, it's a mixture of Tex-Mex and trailer park trash. I know you, because I used to live here too. I guess that makes you just like me. Does that make you wonder about yourself? Your secret's safe. I don't know why I'm here, but I can't stay. The more things change, the more they stay the strange. Sitting here on this plane, watching the empty faces crawl past me. You know, they all seem to have ingested the same melancholy pill. Instead of warm, fuzzy, and safe, they seem cold and judgmental. Little conversations come in and out of audio focus. It's all slow motion, but somehow moving at the speed of fear. I feel such the animal. I'm always the animal. My body's the cage. I'm locked in this cage. My home is worn. It's torn. It's been abused, and I like it. I don't know why I'm here, but I can't stay. The more things change, the more they stay the strange. Here I sit in another hotel, and it smells like someone else. I lie in bed, and I can taste the smell of smoke, the drink, the stink, and the stain on the floor. I wonder, was he with his wife or another man's whore? Scratches upon the glass tell of the drugs, and the radio is still on to the music that made them dance. I bet it was sweet, but me? Fuck, man, I gotta get some sleep. June 24th, 1987. Day off. Hotel, Austin, Texas, 2 p.m. Mars is acting like a school kid around Amy. I mean, it's cute and all, but she is an employee. On stage last night, they were looking at each other all lovey-dovey. Made me want to puke. Chicks equal trouble. Tommy fucked this chick Robin Crosby used to go out with, Tawny Catane. Now she's with the singer from Whitesnake, and they want to open up for us. Like I said, chicks equal trouble. Tawny used to shoot up with Robin, and after I met her, she kept asking me to get her some dope. Like I said, chicks equal trouble. P.S. Speaking of trouble, there's a club here that the bartender can hook me up. I think I'll get a bindle of China White.
Doug Thaler. I can understand why the other guys weren't happy when Mick started dating Amy Canyon. She was an employee, and when she got together with Mick, we suddenly had a situation where the guitar player in the band was being led around by the nose by an employee. Mick is a lovely guy, but he's one of those guys who gets totally dominated by every single female partner that he has. It's always the same story. All that ever changes is the girl's name.
Frank Irwin Center. June 25th, 1987. Hotel, Austin, Texas, 5:15 a.m. Just got back from Beale Street. Went to a few different clubs. Tommy, Vince, and myself with Fred found an amazing strip club. The girls took us in the back and gave us lines and blowjobs for free. Only in America. God bless Texas. This girl named Ashley gave me a number of a guy who sells packages of rigs for $5 a pop. He's dropping off a 12-pack, just nice to have around. You never know if you're going to need them. Vitamin B? Ha. The show's sold out, and there's no sound check, so I'm going to have a little party in my room alone, but I promise I'll be in bed by 7 a.m. 10:30 a.m. Fuck, I did it again. I'm still up. I ended up in the hotel closet freaking out. I took two Halcyons about 30 minutes ago, so I'm pretty mellow right now. But I was sure hotel security was coming to get me. I hate cocaine. 6:45 p.m. Just woke up. Rich said everyone was freaking out because I wouldn't answer my door. Fucking hell, I was just sleeping. Damn. I wish everyone would just relax. I'm not going to die. I got to go to the show right now, then off to somewhere. I need to look in the book. I have no idea. Ross Halfen is here with some innocent-looking kid who's never left England before. I guess he might need some fucking over, crew style.
Jason Brass. I was 16 in 1987 when I flew out from London with my dad's friend Ross Halfen to meet Motley Crue on the Girls, Girls, Girls tour. Ross was photographing them for an English magazine and invited me along as his unpaid assistant. My dad didn't want me to go because he thought Motley Crue would corrupt me, but Ross promised to look after me. It was the first time I'd been anywhere, really, but I could tell this was a proper rock and roll tour. Nicky was a full-on, jack-drinking, coke-snorting rocker, and as soon as he saw me, he started, "Dude, have some Jack. Have some Krell." Vince was quiet, but the rest of them were great. On the third or fourth night I was there, we all went out for a Mexican meal. I was too young to legally drink, but Nicky was pouring strawberry margaritas down my throat. There was this groupie with us, 6 feet tall, in blonde hair and stockings, and Nicky told her, "If you want to hang out with the crew, you've got to sort my young mate out." So she came back to the room with me. She was very talented. Nicky was very moody. Before the shows, he'd be very down and solitary, just sitting on his own watching something depressing like Sid and Nancy. But after the show, if he wanted to party, he wouldn't leave you alone until you partied with him. He seemed to be around at weird hours, like in the early hours when everybody else was asleep. One night he came into my room with Ross and a couple of girls. It was about 4 in the morning and they wouldn't give us any more alcohol on room service. So Nicky phoned down the reception and said, "Look, I'm Nicky Six. I need a bottle of JD now and I will give you $1,000 for it." They still wanted nothing to do with him. They just told him, "Sir, go to bed. You've had enough."
Convention Center Arena, San Antonio, Texas. June 26, 1987. On the Motley jet to Houston. 1 a.m. Tonight's show was killer, but I really freaked out. Some fucking fans in the front row had this big banner that said Vanity on it. That insane bitch has been talking to magazines, telling them we're getting married. She has no right to do that. I have to get rid of her. Music to get on CD. 1. Sweet, Give Us a Wink. 2. Deep Purple, Come Taste the Band. 3. Mott the Hoople, Greatest Hits. 4. David Bowie, Diamond Dogs. 5. Queen, 1, 2, and Sheer Heart Attack. 6. Alice Cooper, Billion Dollar Babies. 7. Sex Pistols, Never Mind the Bollocks. 8. Iggy and the Stooges, Always Raw Power. Number 9, AC/DC, Dirty Deeds. 10. Lou Reed and Transformer. The Summit, Houston, Texas. June 27th, 1987. Hotel, 3 p.m. Check my messages at home. David Crosby called. He said he'd break my arms if I was getting high. I guess I won't be calling him back. My machine was completely full, so I just erased the rest of them without listening. There really isn't anyone I want to talk to anyway. The band is tight as well. Everything is on autopilot musically. The crowds have been insane. All the shows have been sold out. You'd think I'd be happy all the time. I'm reading Diary of a Rockstar by Ian Hunter. Maybe I'll release my diary as a book one day. Yeah, right. You imagine? P.S. Doug called today and said everyone liked the idea for Wildside to be the next video. Radio's digging the track, too. I think a live video is in order. Off to the venue now. P.P.S. I told Slash when we were back in L.A. I'd try and get his band, Guns N' Roses, a support slot on the tour. It looks like it's going to work out. I played the music to the guys and they liked it. There's no interest in them right now, but maybe this will help them. Anything is better than Whitesnake. Slash is a good guy. When he doesn't piss the bed. Anyway, P.P.P.S. Maybe having these dealers follow us is a bad idea. June 28th, 1987. Day off. Hotel. Houston. 5 p.m. Speaking of Houston, Doc was telling me how when the album was number 2, we should have gone to number 1. We had the number 1 album in the country, but for mysterious reasons, payola anybody? Whitney Houston was number 1. That sucks. Girls Should Have Been our first number one album. Fucked over by a black chick. Seems like a pattern developing in my life. Going down to T-Bone's room. The dealers have 2 ounces of blow. They're going to give it to us. Why not? It's the day off, right?
Fred Saunders. On the girls' tour, every band member had their own very different approach to our days off. Vince would always be after pussy. Mick would be with Amy. Tommy would just be up for whatever was going on, and Nicky was kind of shifty. He'd slide in and out of the picture periodically, but he was tough to deal with because of the mood swings brought on by the drugs. Nicky could be very sensitive and emotional. He and I would sometimes have these big late-night talks where we'd both end up crying. On the other hand, he could also be a complete asshole. I couldn't possibly begin to remember how many times on the tour he punched me or told me to fuck off. And I always punched him back.
I guess that's why they call it liquid courage. I mean, why else would you punch an ex-Hell's Angel who is a fourth-degree black belt? But Fred had a huge heart to go with all his bravado. I used to have great talks with him late into the night, and we both agreed that chicks equal trouble. Our next album, Dr. Feelgood, went to number one, but I still say it was our second number one album. Myriad Coliseum, Oklahoma. June 30th, 1987. Backstage, 7:30 p.m. Backstage is the most boring place on earth when you're trying to be good. In fact, it's the most boring place on earth even when you're bad. I haven't written in a while. I seem to have nothing to write about, to you anyway. I can never keep these diaries up on the road because everything just seems to become a massive blur. It's really the same thing day in, day out, except the shows. To see the faces of those kids, I swear it's the only reason I'm alive. I better get ready for the show. Everybody's getting along really good. No drama yet. We're leaving after the show to Shreveport. In Houston, I just played guitar in my room the whole time, wrote some cool riffs and ideas. Glad we're out of Texas. It was a cocaine blizzard there. I was heading down a street I've been down before, and I know what's next for me. I've been taking a lot of halcyons that Rich Fisher turned me on to. Between these little pills and all the blow, it's like doing a speedball with the band's stamp of approval on it. My newest trick is crushing up halcyons and mixing them with blow in a vial. We call this little concoction zombie dust.
Tommy Lee. Halcyon was like the 80s Xanax. You'd only need to take one, and immediately, it would be night-night, you would be fast out until late the next morning. Well, we would take 4 or 5 of them, then start drinking Jack, then we'd leave the hotel and go out for the night. The next morning, we would be exchanging stories. Dude, do you remember what happened last night? I have no idea, but I pissed my bed. We would wake up and not have the first idea where we were. Those pills were bizarre. They were full-on blackout, and on that tour, we were taking a fucking lot of them.
Ross Halfen. On the girls' tour, Nicky turned me on to doing coke all night. We'd still be wired at 10 the next morning, so he taught me to drink NyQuil to knock me out. Normally, people would take a spoonful if they had the flu. We would drink a bottle in one go, then pass out.